How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're past the half century mark. You believe it? Locked in for episode 51 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can head out to iTunes and search Locked On Thunder or any other Locked On podcast in order to find that there and subscribe to the podcast while you're there. You can also leave a review if you're feeling like it. Find us on audioboom.com too. Today's show is presented by SeatGeek. Use SeatGeek to find the best deals on tickets. I'm on every weekday right from now on, and as you know, if you've listened to the last 3 weeks, so Monday through Friday, no shows on weekends. Friday's episode is going to be a preseason preview podcast. I've talked about that a lot, going over-unders for every team with Josh Lloyd, the host of Locked On Fantasy Basketball. Could be two podcasts, could be one. Depends on how long we go. If it's two, I'll break up Eastern and Western Conference. It really just depends. I'm going to be welcoming in my guest for today's show, Locked On Warriors host Danny LaRue, in a few minutes. I will say, don't get upset with me. He is the Locked On Warriors host, but we're actually not going to be talking Warriors. We're going to be talking Thunder stuff. Danny's great with contract stuff, so we're going to be talking contract extensions for Steven Adams, Victor Oladipo, and Andre Robertson in a little bit more detail than what I discussed on the podcast earlier in the week. Really good conversation. First, though, you guys realize this comes out Thursday morning, so 4 days until the Thunder's preseason opener. Like, that's it. 4 days. That's nothing. We're like coming on real basketball really soon. We had the openings, you know, the open practice scrimmage on Tuesday night, and now we're going to have real basketball against not an NBA team, but a real team. Like, when you turn on Monday morning's podcast, or say if you turn on Monday morning's podcast, I won't get presumptuous here, but you'll be listening to a Locked On Thunder episode on game day. That's like kind of a big deal for me. Like, I feel like I've been doing this podcast forever now, like 51 episodes, but we've never had a podcast on game day. It's never happened. Like, I started this thing at the very end of June, after the draft, right before free agency started, like a couple of days before free agency started. It was a month after the Thunder played their last game. It was a couple of weeks after the final ended. So, this is a first game day podcast. Gonna see if I can shake it up. Let's ramp it up now, though. Like Steven Adams' offense, maybe. Like Steven Adams' offense is going to be more this year. I don't know how much, but like kind of possibly sort of more. More touches to go around. So Steven Adams was getting really fancy during the blue and white game. Like really, really fancy. Like he was street balling, basically. Like he was making no-look bounce passes twice. One to Sabonis, one to Cameron Payne when they were cutting in the lane. They were nice passes. Also passes he will never make in a game. Like, he will literally not make that pass in a game once all year, except maybe if they're up like 25 points in the fourth quarter and he's feeling crazy, maybe he'll do it and get benched. Like, he will never make those passes in a game ever. But it was fun to see him street ball in an environment where it's like totally appropriate for him to do it. Him and Cantor were having fun on Tuesday night, for sure. I do think his actual passing ability, though, can translate into games, and I do think it's going to help them this year. I really do think it's going to help them this year in some ways. Like, Adams barely touched the ball last year. He was 12th or 13th on the team in average seconds per touch, which, you know, has something to do with the fact that he's getting a lot of rebounds and just passing out quickly. But still, like, he was fifth among big men, which is, I mean, you know, that's low. Like, that's really low. Because a lot of his touches, they were just him throwing it down on lobs, so he'd touch it for a split second, or he'd get it within the offense and, you know, hand it off on a dribble handoff or something like that. Like, his touches were not, they were dump offs. They were not situations where he was holding onto the ball for a decent amount of time. They weren't post touches. He wasn't getting the ball in pick and rolls like up high and having an opportunity to do something. And Billy Donovan talked about actually doing that. He talked about that on Tuesday. He talked about giving Adams a bigger role in the offense. There are touches to go around. No Ibaka, no Durant, no Waiters. They're not all going to go to Westbrook and Victor Oladipo. Someone else is getting them. Cameron Payne will touch the ball a little bit more. But Adams is going to get some of them. He's not going to get a million touches. I don't think he's going to have a 20% usage, but it's going to go up. And I think his passing is going to be a big part of that. I think I've been saying, like, since I started this podcast, I really think one of the things we're going to see Steven Adams add to his game this year is the Thunder are going to give him the ball on those short rolls on the high pick and roll, and he's going to get the ball around the three-point line, and he's going to have an opportunity either to pass to a guy in the corner, like an Andre Roberson in the corner, maybe a Kyle Singler in the corner, whoever's out there, whoever's manning that corner spot for, as a wing. He's going to have an opportunity to kick to that guy or go one dribble to the basket. Now, he's probably not going to pull up for mid-range jumpers. Maybe at some point in his career, that's where he is. I know the Thunder would like to see him work his game out to 15 feet. He's not there right now. That's not something that's going to happen right now. I don't know if it's something that will happen ever, but it's not going to happen right now. But he is somebody who I think has the ball skills to go one dribble to the hoop and has the awareness to maybe know when he should kick out to a shooter in the corner. And I think there are big men who can do that, and that's really valuable. It adds an extra element to the pick and roll because now all of a sudden you can't just guard the pass and guard Adams. Like, now all of a sudden you have to guard the pass and guard Adams, I should say. You can't just assume, all right, Adams has got the ball, he's down low, he's gonna go up. It adds another element, another dimension to his game, and it's another way just to make the defense think just a tad more. Just a tad more. And when you're making the defense think, that's good offense. The process of good offense is getting the defense to think and getting the defense to move. Because the more the defense has to think, the more the defense has to do things it's uncomfortable with, and the more the defense has to move, the higher the chances are the defense makes a mistake. And when the defense makes a mistake, NBA players, especially ones with point guards as good as Russell Westbrook, and shooting guards as good as Victor Oladipo, especially teams like that, but pretty much any NBA team, when a defense makes a mistake, when a defense leaves somebody uncovered, when a defense misrotates, or when a defense messes up somehow, offenses in the NBA can recognize that super, super, super quickly. Really, really quickly. And that's how you capitalize on those mistakes. And I think Steven Adams, him passing a little bit more in scenarios in which we haven't seen him do it very often before, whether it's at the post or whatnot, or like I said, in those pick and roll scenarios, or just passes within the offense, maybe swings in the perimeter that he just recognizes quicker or whatever it is. Even those sorts of passes, that'll just make the defense think a little bit more, and I think that's going to add something to the Thunder offense. I don't think this is going to be a great offense, but I do think that's going to be something that's going to help it a lot. So Monday's game, just some details before we get to Danny. The Thunder leave for Spain this weekend. They're playing at Real Madrid on Monday. So that game time is 1:30 p.m. Central Time. It's going to be on NBA TV. Unfortunately, I will not be there. I wish I could be there. I've never been to Madrid. I've been to Barcelona. Barcelona is awesome. That's a great city. I love that city. It's so much fun. There's so much to do. It's awesome. Never been to Madrid, but love to go to Madrid. You know what? I may just go. I don't even need to get credentialed. I'll just buy a ticket and go as a fan. Like, I wonder how much those tickets are. I bet they're a little pricier than normal games, considering Madrid is playing an actual NBA team and not a European team. That's the thing. Like, overpriced tickets, though, it's the worst. Is there a more extreme feeling of regret than walking into an arena and just thinking that the ticket isn't worth it? But I think it would be worth it for that game against the Thunder and you get to be in Madrid. But if you're there and you start to wonder, did I actually get the best ticket on this deal? Or I get the best deal on this ticket? SeatGeek can help prevent that feeling, you know. SeatGeek is an easy, mobile-friendly experience. You just download the app. It's called SeatGeek, and the ticket is right there on your phone. You walk to the gate with the barcode on your phone. It's that simple. There's a rating on every ticket, 1 to 100. It's going to tell you what kind of bang for your buck you get for your ticket. Plus, there's an easy way to save even more money. And this is the important part, so make sure that you actually listen up on this one. You just go to the settings tab on the app. You click add a promo code. and you type in my promo code LO Thunder. It's one word, LO Thunder, LO like locked on. And SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. If you want to know if there are any deals to Thunder games or Sooner games, or maybe if you want to hit up some preseason games or whatever it is that you're missing out on this fall, you can actually sign up for price alerts for certain events, and those are going to let you know when pricing. They're going to let you know the pricing, and they're also going to, more importantly, point out the moments leading up to events when prices start to actually drop and you can duck in and get tickets for a price that maybe you weren't expecting to be able to get them for. And SeatGeek is going to make sure to let you know what's in your selected price range that you can pick before you actually see the tickets. There's no more wondering what if when you think you may have overpaid for a game. Use SeatGeek and that fear is gone. After the break, we're welcoming in Locked On Warriors host Danny LaRue.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily Oklahoma City Thunder podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Let's welcome to the show Locked On Warriors host. I should say new Locked On Warriors host, kind of just started the podcast pretty recently. He's been on the show before, Danny LaRue. Danny, what's happening?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. So where else can people find your writing? We got Locked On Warriors, obviously, which you can plug, and there's sporting news, and there's the realist of GMs and other things too, right? Maybe.
Yeah. So my writing is at The Athletic. That's where my Warrior stuff is. CBA cap stuff at Sporting News, and then Real GM. A lot of other things, including what's called the CBA Encyclopedia, which I'm trying to explain, and other writers are trying to kind of get these topics out and explain them. And that's getting back in full force. Going to try to do at least a couple pieces a month on that.
That's a great segue. Thank you for that fantastic segue, because we're going to talk about kind of nerdy CBA things today. And don't worry, it's not a ton of Warriors talk. Thunder fans shy away from Warriors talk pretty quickly for obvious reasons. So
we have made this a Locked On Thunder podcast, not a crossover podcast. This is just us talking OKC.
Exactly. This is Danny, host of Locked On Warriors, but mostly Danny, person who knows more about law and more about the CBA than I do. So I'm having him on. So something that I talked about on a podcast earlier in the week for a few minutes is that the Thunder have about a month now until October 31st to extend their rookie scale guys. That's Victor Oladipo, Steven Adams, and Andre Roberson, for those who don't know. And the Thunder are in a bit of an interesting situation because a lot of those guys are going to make a lot more than what their cap holds are next summer when they sign their contract, whether that's an extension or whether that's re-signing or re-signing as a free agent in the summer of 2017. And because of that, I think a lot of those guys are a lot more valuable if you just re-sign them as free agents, because you get more cap room with the lower cap holes as opposed to the higher salaries. I imagine, though, Danny, that there's some salary that those guys could sign for in an extension that would be worth it, even if they are making above their cap holds, even if it does eat into their 2017, even if it does eat into their 2017 salary cap, just because in the ensuing years, whether they sign for four years, 3 years, whatever it is, in the ensuing years, you'll maybe get them for discounted prices. How far below the max does that have to be for someone like Steven Adams or Victor Oladipo to justify an extension, even if you are paying a guy more than his cap hold?
So it's kind of a sliding scale, because you have to think about what is the usefulness of the cap space that you have. And part of the reason why I am a big proponent, depending on the price, of the Thunder agreeing to terms with at least some of these guys is that the amount of cap space that they really have, it's, you know, let's say it's around 5 to 10 million is probably what it is, which realistically is not that far from like the mid-level exception and things like that. So it's not a lot. So it's not the kind of sacrifice that it would be for, let's say, a team that had $30 million in space, like the Wizards last year. That's actually probably the best example. You know, if the Wizards had re-signed Bradley Beal, they wouldn't have had the space to theoretically get a max guy. They didn't get somebody, but they wouldn't have had that space. It was the same with the Thunder or with the Pistons with Andre Drummond. So they don't have that calculus, and so that actually really helps the negotiations, because it's one of the downsides that is taken off the table. And another really important part of this is just a human factor, and I think this was big in Giannis's extension that just came out, is that the money that is less than the maximum for these guys is still life-changing money, and you lock it in. So, yeah, you know, maybe if you're Victor Oladipo and leaving $5 million from your theoretical maximum off, you know, yeah, that's $5 million that you might not get. But $20 million, $18 million, something in that range, you know, that's enough money to set you up, you set your kids up, set your grandkids up for life. And turning that down is a hard thing. And that's something we saw last year with, you know, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist and Valanciunas and a couple other guys just signed extensions that looked low. But at the same point, you know, are you going to knock a guy from guaranteeing himself $50 million? I mean, that's just not the way it works anymore.
Right. And even if we take ourselves away from the extension point, I mean, like, guys have historically done that in general. Like even away from extensions, just in free agency. Look at what happened during the summer of 2015. We thought, because everybody knew that the cap spike was coming this summer, it wasn't a surprise. Like, everyone knew the cap was going to jump. We didn't know what the exact numbers that it was going to be, but we knew there was going to be an historic jump in the cap that we'd never seen before. And we expected, I think, a lot more people in the summer of 2015 who were free agents to sign one-year deals and then become free agents again in 2016 and then sign, you know, their max deals in 2016. Like, people thought, maybe LaMarcus Aldridge signs a one-year deal, and then he becomes a free agent in 2016, even if he wants to stay where he is or whatever it is. And yeah, that stuff complicates with bird rights and all that stuff. But we thought more people were going to take one-year deals. At least I did, because that's really how you can maximize the amount of money that you're going to make the most. And people opted for security. And I don't – not everyone. You know, LeBron did his one-year deal like he always does, but – mostly everyone opted for security. And just because you're not maximizing the amount of money that you could make, it's not necessarily the wrong decision. I completely understand why you would opt for security, especially when it's not like you're opting for security so that you can make $70,000 a year and then you're moving on. Like, your security is, you know, a $100 million contract in a lot of these cases. So I understand why that's happening. And I think that's just the mentality, like, it's not a mentality that basketball players have. I think that's a mentality that people often have. You just see a ton of money that you've never had before. And it's secure. And I'm not saying it's the wrong decision. I think it's a case by case basis, depending on the person, depending on the lifestyle, depending on all, you know, your earning potential, all of those things. But I do think everyone has their own threshold of where they prefer security to the risk, just where the risk runs too high. And that's always interesting to see how those sorts of traits are taken advantage of in rookie scale extensions.
Yeah. And it really does affect a lot of different things. And it was very good to bring up the example of last year. The player that I thought of was the most prominent. You could use LaMarcus, but he chose to change teams, would probably be Kevin Love. Kevin Love, even with him having a disappointing year, he left a lot of money on the table. That's just the way it happened. You know, somebody would have maxed him out. That wouldn't have been a problem at all. And depending on, you know, how he feels about Cleveland and everything like that, you know, maybe he would have left. I think he would have stayed, considering they won the title. But you see players that, even though it's like a virtual lock that they're going to get a max contract, and we knew where max contracts were probably going to go, you know, they chose that security. It's hard to say, you know, to somebody, oh, you're going to do that, because there's a lot of uncertainty. And the other important part to understand about the NBA is that these are fully guaranteed contracts. This isn't a circumstance like the NFL where you hear these crazy numbers and then only a portion of it is guaranteed, or there are ways to, you know, set off and things like that. In the NBA, the best example of this is probably Chris Bosh, sadly enough. We all hope that everything gets better and that he can be okay, but the money that he signed for with Miami a couple summers ago when LeBron left, that money is guaranteed to him. And whether they can clear it off their books, whether they can, you know, use any sort of thing, whether insurance pays part of it, Chris Bosh is still getting that money. And that's a huge thing for him and his family.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting to me. So let's take this back to the OKC extensions now. What do you think is a reasonable, because Steven Adams is a tough one for me to evaluate in terms of extensions, because I think Steven Adams is going to have a really great year. I think he's going to really solidify himself as whatever, top 10, top 7 center, and a guy who can and probably will jump higher than that as he moves forward, because he's only 23 years old. He was good in the regular season last year. He wasn't great. He wasn't nearly as good as he was during the postseason, when I thought he was fantastic. And I think I, along with a bunch of other people, I would say it's probably the majority opinion, among people who really follow and watch basketball, I would say it's the majority opinion that people think that Steven Adams is going to sustain that level he was playing in the playoffs into this regular season. That being said, I mean, that was a month of basketball. It was a month of great basketball, and it was a month of great basketball during the most important games he's ever played in his entire life, probably. But it was still a month of basketball compared to 3 years of basketball that we saw him play before. Now, I know the Thunder have thought very highly of him for a long time, and they thought he was going to get to that point that he got to in the postseason last year. Like, they don't think that was a fluke, and I don't think that was a fluke either. I think he's going to have a really good year. But we haven't seen it for more than 1 month. So it's kind of hard for me to justify giving all of that, like you said, guaranteed money to a guy like that who's really proven that level of basketball. I mean, he's good. He's been good, but has proven to play that level of basketball for only a month. And so the Steven Adams contract extension value is really interesting to me. I'm wondering, where do you think that falls in your mind?
So there are a couple of different important things to consider. One of them is that he would be a restricted free agent, and so they would have match rights. And I would say, barring a surprise, a team will give him, you know, his maximum offer sheet. And so at the current estimates, I just worked out the numbers in preparation for the show, that would be about a 4-year contract worth about $102 million, about, you know, and that depends on a lot of other things. And presumably a team would offer a final year player option, basically the same thing that Gordon Hayward got when they signed an offer sheet with Charlotte and then Utah matched it. So one of the aspects that Oklahoma City needs to consider is, you know, how do they weigh a 3-year deal, you know, because functionally that's what you think of a 3-year deal with the player option as, versus 4 or even 5 years. And so that is a choice that they need to make. And another very, very important part of this for specifically this year is the fact that we will almost definitely be dealing with a new collective bargaining agreement when Steven Adams, if he hits free agency, when he hits free agency. And there are a lot of things that could change. That could be, you know, the duration of contracts could change, where the maximum salary is could change, you know, the nature of it. And we have seen the Players Association make a more open push for some of those things, and that could affect Oklahoma City. And so that is putting motivation for the teams to maybe go a little bit higher. And CJ McCollum and Giannis got closer to their maximum than you usually see in an extension that isn't full max. And the reason for that is it could go higher. So, you know, I said that so that would be about a $24 million starting salary. Maybe the rules change and he can get 26, 27. We don't really know that at this point. So that can lead to a middle ground that is more feasible, especially in a case like Oklahoma City where, you know, that cap space that they have probably isn't going to be that big of a difference maker anyway.
Oh, labor negotiations affecting Thunder rookie contract extensions. Never seen that before.
Well, they benefited last time.
Well, they didn't benefit. It was just they had a fortunate situation, I wouldn't say.
The league defrayed their costs, and Durant didn't count as a designated player.
Because
I would say
signed, well, that was because he signed under the previous CBA,
right,
where the designated player didn't exist. So right. for those who don't know, you can designate one player to sign a 5-year deal. And so in this case, the Thunder's guy is Russell Westbrook. And you can designate one guy in rookie extensions. They can sign a 5-year deal. And that's your one designated player. The Thunder had already extended Kevin Durant. And that was under the previous CBA signed Danny Wendt, 2005?
That CBA was, I think it was 2005. And the new one came in 2011.
Right. So Kevin Durant had signed his extension under the old rules, the 2005 CBA. When the designated player concept, it didn't exist. It wasn't a rule. It didn't exist. And then Russell Westbrook signed as the designated player in 2011. And a lot of people kind of thought that Russell Westbrook, he can't be a designated player. Kevin Durant's already a designated player. But Kevin Durant was ruled not a designated player because when he signed, designated player didn't even exist as a concept. And so, yeah, that's the Thunder. That's just the way it worked out. I don't think that's benefiting. That's just
referring to that was the way that they handled the Rose Rule with him, which is I'll summarize in a short version, which is that they raised the maximum that these best players could get paid, and the Thunder agreed to pay him his maximum, and then it raised on them, but then the league paid those costs back to them, which I thought was a little bit ridiculous.
Yeah, you know, I kind of did too. I thought I thought that they should have avoided the situation altogether, but I do think once making the ruling, paying the cost back, like the Thunder still had that money on their cap for a couple of years anyway. So like that's really the issue. How much,
but we've gotten pretty far into the weeds. We can get back into the more populist areas of this.
We are so inside baseball right now. What are the chances that anyone knows what the hell we're talking about right now?
Oh, I think they're pretty good because this kind of thing is actually really relevant. Like that, what we've learned in the last couple of years for various players, LeBron being one of the most obvious, is that these nuances really do matter. I mean, there's a reason it's a part of how I'm lucky enough to make my living, is that these kind of things, it helped facilitate some of the major moves. I'm deliberately leaving one of them out of respect. But these kinds of rules and nuances have been really important. And so understanding them, but you can always bring it back to this human thing. And I think that's to get back to Steven Adams is how willing is he, since it'll be a 4-year deal if he agrees, how willing is he to leave a little bit of money on the table? Because there is a common ground with him. They both really like him. It's pretty understood, you know, if the rules don't change dramatically, how much money he's going to get. So will he take a little bit off of that to secure it? And the other reason that really matters is because of the luxury tax. And so the other reason why I don't think Oklahoma City is going to use their cap space is that if they then signed all of these guys to these exorbitant rates, Victor, Steven Adams, and, you know, we'll see what happens with Joffrey Laverne and what happens with Andre Robertson. But if they do all that on top of spending the cap space, they're going to be paying the luxury tax. And, you know, they could. That's not like unforgivable, unseasonable, anything like that. But it gets a lot harder. And so if that money isn't really going to do a whole lot in terms of making them better, because you can't get much of anything for 5 to 10 million now, then why not just spend that space now and get these players to take a discount, which actually does save you money?
That makes a lot of sense. And honestly, you know, I think the Thunder get crap sometimes, justified, sometimes not, for not spending money. I understand a small market team that's not trying to pay a luxury tax and put themselves in a repeater situation when they don't have a championship caliber roster. When you have a championship caliber roster, we're talking about, it's a different conversation. But when you have a roster that's good and a playoff roster, and I think is probably good for 45 wins, you don't want to put yourself in a situation where you have to pay a repeater once you're finally in a situation to put together a championship team. You want to pay your luxury tax in the first year or the second year in that scenario and not be in a situation where you're paying an exorbitant amount of tax money and costing your owner a ton of money. So that way, all of a sudden, you can't keep it together for that for, you know, long enough or as long as that you want to, and give yourself enough chances to win. I mean, that's something that I think is just, it's smart business. It's smart strategizing, not paying the luxury tax, you know, in a year that, you know, the Thunder are in right now, in a transition year, in a rebuilding year, in a year where you're not a championship caliber team.
That's a great point. And I think it's something that if more ownership followed your lead, we would have teams that were in better situations. Because what happens a lot of times when you see a non-championship team paying the luxury tax, there's been a mistake in terms of evaluation. The most obvious example of this is the Brooklyn Nets, you know, when they made all those moves and spent a bunch of money at the same time. They weren't a championship team. They were a good team. You know, I'm not going to knock it saying they were garbage or anything like that. But if they had made that same realization that you just talked about, they would have saved themselves so much trouble and so much hardship because of everything else they did. And so when your team is good enough, it is, at this point, it's basically a requirement that you have to be willing to do it. Not that you have to actually do it. The Warriors haven't paid the luxury tax yet. You know, they won a championship and got really close. But you have to be willing to do it, because that's just how you're going to keep the team together. But before that point, if being a little bit judicious about the way you spend money is a very good thing.
Oladipo, he's been jerked around a lot in Orlando. I mean, he was a point guard, and then he was a shooting guard, and then he was both, and then he was on the bench, and then he was in the starting lineup, and he was playing with guys that I don't think always suited his style and the way that he played. And I think there are a lot of inconsistencies in the roster on this Thunder team too. But I do think he's a better fit than he was in Orlando, which is honestly setting the bar a little low, where I don't think they did a good job of integrating his style into their offense, and honestly maybe into their defense in some ways too. So I think there's a chance we haven't seen what Victor Oladipo can do in full. Like, I don't think anybody will argue with me when I say that Victor Oladipo hasn't reached his potential. Now, maybe there are some people who don't think that he will. I think he'll certainly get better from where he is right now, especially when he's in a better fit and a better situation. And Victor Oladipo has had some coaching struggles too. Like, I didn't think Jacques Vaughn did a good job. Jans Borrego was an interim guy there. And Scott Skiles, that was just a chaotic year that was in Orlando last year. Playing in a more stable organization, a more stable coach, I think we could see Oladipo play better. Is it smart for Oladipo? I mean, if the Thunder come with him saying, like, is Oladipo the type of guy who shouldn't take that less money because he thinks that, you know, finally I'm in a situation where I can thrive a little bit more than I did in Orlando, and that organization held me back a little bit, and maybe there's a chance that I could go out and I could earn myself a max or close to it? Or is he somebody who can say, he's a good player. He was a good player in Orlando, no question, but he was also inconsistent, and he had some times where he was really good, and he had some times where he didn't look quite as great. Is he a guy who should say, well, I've been inconsistent. What if that continues into this year? Let me take the guaranteed money right now.
The guy that might linger in Victor Oladipo's mind and his agent's mind, more notably, is Harrison Barnes. So Harrison Barnes was a highly touted college prospect who then was a highly drafted pro prospect who, you know, had some inconsistencies. He didn't get really jerked around in terms of like a coaching staff stuff. It was more just that his play wasn't great. He still got a max contract because of his potential and his talent. Granted, he had the benefit of being on this immensely successful team. But what that showed is that if you are talented and you are young, you can get some crazy offers. So he can do that. But at the same point, that isn't a guarantee. And so the security of getting that life-changing money is there. What might give maybe more the Thunder pause than Oladipo is just the uncertainty on how he fits in within this whole mosaic. I mean, the hope is that Russell Westbrook will be around long-term. And, you know, Oladipo-Westbrook is something that is a legitimate unknown at this point. And we will know a lot more by the end of training camp than we do right now, which is one of the huge benefits of the timing of all this, is that, you know, when it's around Halloween, the team gets a month to figure out how this all works, though they don't get it really forged in the fire of the NBA regular season. But that is a challenge because they need to know this. And if you're going to commit serious money, even if it's not max money, to this guy, you want to make sure that it's all going to make sense together, because you want your best case scenario to be that, you know, that elite thing that we're kind of talk about. And so the Thunder, by waiting, aren't really taking much of a risk, because I think they know kind of what the quote-unquote worst case scenario is that he's going to get, you know, max or close to it. The two-guard market is really thin, so that's kind of going to be where he is. And if that happens, then so be it. They can figure out what they want to do with that. And if the market depresses on him, you could argue that that's kind of another kind of worst case scenario, what happened with Dion Waiters, where he just wasn't good enough. And in that case, you're going to be happy that you didn't commit the money.
Let's talk about Andre Roberson too, because Roberson is in a slightly different situation than these guys, because Roberson doesn't stand to get paid nearly as much as Adams or Oladipo, who are, you know, Roberson is a starter, but, you know, these are kind of core guys. Oladipo and Adams are guys who you move forward with in your core. And I think Roberson is a wonderful defensive player, but I don't think he's quite on that level of those guys, and I don't think he's going to make that amount of money. He's also got a lower cap hold. It's not significantly lower than Adams is, but it is like half of Oladipo's. So how much money do you think someone like Roberson commands on the market after the summer? Like, what is – I've been trying to think of his comp. He's an interesting player because he's so one way historically. He's so one way. I mean, he's decent in transition, but in the half court offense, I mean, he's a one way player for the most part. But he's young and he's athletic. And I've been trying to think of a free agent comp for him in this current market, and I've been struggling to do it. Like, any ideas? What do you think?
For those that are high on him, I think something in the Courtney Lee range is probably about right. You know, so
Lee drains threes is the difference.
Yeah. Courtney Lee, I mean, but he's also been passed around a little bit. You know, like, Lee was basically kind of salary dumped in that move with Memphis and Charlotte towards the end of that year. He's been traded, I think, four times in his career. So it's a little bit different with Courtney Lee. What I would say in terms of, if you're trying to set a value for him, the big question is whether he's a starter or not, because starter money, it's a little bit vague right now, but if you put it around $14 million a year, it's probably pretty close to that. So if you think of him as a starter, so I would offer him right now, I would be thinking more in the like $9 to $10 million range, something around there. Because, you know, then you're getting out of some risk mitigation. You don't know exactly how good he's going to be. You don't know how he's going to fit with this roster. But the question is, would he take something like that? And once you start to push above that, let's say you get to 11 or 12, then you're like, well, what? Why are we paying this now? Like, what is the benefit to us? Because the other huge benefit that the Thunder have with him is that he doesn't do great in terms of counting stats. So the things that lead to guys getting overpaid are generally not things that Robertson does well. So he could be undervalued by the market, and since they have match rights on him, they can match whatever he gets. If it thins out a little bit, then they get the benefit of that. They can bring him back at the deal that he gets. And there aren't really that many comps for him, just because those guys don't really, it's like hip restricted free agency, and it gets a little bit weird sometimes. Like, Monty Unis is very different in terms of their strengths and weaknesses, but it was hard for him to really get a market. But defensive players on the wing are really valuable. So, yeah, I'd say something. It's a long-winded way of saying, you know, I would agree with him to something in the $10 million range if he's down with that. And if that's too little for him, then you roll the dice.
Here's the problem. You're going at it from the Thunder's perspective. From my perspective, if I'm Andre Robertson, offer me $10 million a year in an extension.
We'll give you 4 years, $40 million, and let's say we'll even give you a player option on the last year.
But that's less than Solomon Hill.
Mm-hmm.
That's my response.
Solomon Hill was an unrestricted free agent. So it will be a great test. Solomon Hill is a great example to bring up because the Pacers stupidly declined his option, he could do whatever he wanted. He had full power in that, and also the Pelicans overpaid him. With Robertson, what you find with these non-max restricted free agents is that teams are just sitting there like, why are we going to waste our time? Why are we going to do an offer sheet on this guy? If you're going to do that, maybe you think about Alan Crabb. You know, Crabb is another example. But the Nets are such an anachronism with this because they just had all this money to spend and just like, hey, let's throw money at this guy. But that's not usual. And considering how teams spent way too much this summer, there will be fewer options like that out there unless a bunch of the high-end guys just stay where they already are. And because those teams, then teams like the Sixers could throw money at Robertson just for the hell of it.
Isn't it funny how teams are how players are opting for security, and teams with how much they spent, with how much cap space they had, how little they saved, they almost opted for the opposite. Like, they offered for the immediate, we're going to spend this money now.
That's how they are, though. You know, like that's how teams are. They always, when they get an opportunity to spend, they spend recklessly, and then they try to figure out ways to get out of it. That's why there will be an amnesty provision in the next collective bargaining agreement, even though a lot of people think that it's a bad idea, is because owners, they get the gratification. And when you think about it from a lot of perspectives right now, this is different than it was a couple of years ago, because they're also making a lot more revenue, you know, like the TV deal and everything like that. So you can spend this money a little bit more recklessly. You're still going to make a profit. And so you can do that. It makes your fans happy. It increases your, you know, season ticket enthusiasm, all that kind of stuff. Maybe it doesn't increase sales in certain circumstances, but it makes sense in that standpoint. And everybody wants the headlines. And so you always see these, you know, weird contracts and things like that. And whether or not it's a good idea, that's where you go. And for players, like, that's part of the reason why a lot of these things are going to work now, is that, you know, players are happy to oblige, and you can make this during these happy times. And then when the cap flattens out, you know, after the new collective bargaining agreement, this revenue stream is going to stay the same. Then you're going to start to see teams that are really hurting. And, you know, it's going to be kind of like the kid that ate too much candy, and they're going to wonder why they did it. And then the next time the candy shop is doing a 2-for-1 sale, they're going to be there again and eat the whole thing.
Candyman, anything to plug before we head out? Anything else that that you're just dying to tell me?
Well, so I'm already starting to work on 2017 offseason previews along the lines of what we've already been doing. And one of the biggest takeaways is that there are a lot fewer teams that are going to have the kind of flexibility, you know, where we saw where just teams were throwing money out at players, whether they were, you know, awesome max guys or not. Crabb is a great example of this. The market is going to be a lot narrower. But the other thing to consider, I alluded to this, is that we don't know what's going to happen with the big free agents. You know, like, is Chris Paul willing to leave LA if the Clippers disappoint? You know, like, probably not Steph Curry, but you never really know. And so that question of, like, what is this market going to be, coupled with the labor uncertainty, is going to be, it's not going to be as fun as 2016 was, but it could be more challenging and more interesting.
All right, follow Danny. Danny, what's your Twitter handle again?
Danny LaRue, DannyLeroux.
Follow Danny on Twitter. He's great for the cap stuff. He's terrible for his jokes. Just the worst.
Ugh. I'm so offended right now. But I guess getting criticized by you is probably praise, considering that way. And so it's like, it's kind of like the enemy of my humor, enemy is my friend.
Hey, my Les Miles tweet was a masterpiece. That was my shining moment. That was really my greatest Twitter moment. Is that all we got, Danny?
Yeah, I was going to try to make a Syracuse joke, but I don't think I really need to. I think their own performance the last couple of years does that for them.
They went to the Final Four.
Oh, crap, that's right, they did.
That's a terrible joke. Shows how much
I follow college basketball right now. I got off it for a few years, and I forgot that they made the Final Four, but they absolutely did.
The last game they played was literally a Final Four game, so that joke really didn't land at all.
I know. It was terrible. My draft bona fides are just terrible right now, but – at the same point, Syracuse is Syracuse, and those we'll see. I'm excited for how Malachi Richardson does in the NBA. So
me too.
A lingering thing.
He's a fun player. If you wanted to insult me, you can make a Mizzou joke about anything.
Yeah, but that's too easy. You know, like
it's easy.
It's easy, and I don't think that hits your heart as much. And the best jokes at somebody's expense are the ones that are about things that actually matter to them.
That is true. I remember I'm on weekdays, Monday through Friday, going to be doing that over-under preview that I talked about at the beginning of the podcast later this week, or I guess that's going to be for tomorrow's podcast. That's with Josh Lloyd of Locked On Fantasy Basketball. You can head on to iTunes to subscribe and listen to that show or any other Locked On Thunder shows, and you can do the same to find Locked On Warriors or any other member of the Locked On Podcast Network, including Locked On NFL shows as well. If you have any questions or comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. And if you want to advertise with us, if you're local and you want to advertise with us, just shoot me an email or hit me up on Twitter at Fred Katz, FREDKATZ, or again, lockedonthunder@gmail.com. And we'll talk about that as well. Log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs, including those previews, and check out Thunder Road. That's my blog there, to follow team coverage and what's next for the Thunder. That's going to do it for today. I'm back with you tomorrow for more Thunder talk, over-unders, NBA talk, all that fun. Until next time, though, Locked On Thunder is locking up.